How are you?
Well, thank you.
Good, good. Tell me about reteaming with Richard Gere. I think since the last time you guys worked together was Red Corner, yes?
Correct, yeah. It was great. I really like Richard, love working with him. He's a pro's pro. And he had a quality that I thought would be great for the Doctor, which I hadn't seen him do in so many of the roles he played, which was really his empathy.
Mm.
I mean, I thought that was one of the critical characteristics for Dr. Stone. And when he read the script, he was extremely complimentary, which also made me feel good since I've been working on the thing forever.
Yeah. Really?
I think of myself as the world's greatest writer, yeah. And so the only thing I do is I work really hard, take a lot of feedback. And then, by the way, I work with Richard on the script, to get his point of view as an actor and to understand mine as a director, you know, over probably more than a year. So he impacted it, you know, in a very significant way.
Well, give me some examples. Yeah, give me some examples of how, what input he gave you and why it took you so long to write this.
Well, it took me so long because I'm not that good. I'm definitely not that fast. So, to be quite blunt, you know, and the only thing I have is I'm stubborn, you know, and I'm willing to work hard. And I have a lot of friends who are great writers who read stuff and will beat the hell out of the material, you know, like an editor. And that was very helpful. And so I depended on the kindness of friends, not strangers in this case. And, you know, the persistence and the fact that I really wanted to get it right, when I say get it right, the portrayal of paranoid schizophrenia, I think made up for many of the qualities I don't have as a writer. And also I work with Eric Nazarian, a young man who's very smart. So that was helpful too.
Richard
took a lot of the language and he made it more accessible, you know, from the Doctor's point of view. Because in my attempt to be accurate, you know, the way the Doctor spoke often was the way psychiatrists speak, which is very stiff and formal. And so he made it more conversational and therefore made it more accessible. He also is extremely curious. So I work with this professional, Dr. Aaron Stern, who's a very well-known psychoanalyst. I think he's in his mid-90s now.
Wow.
And, I brought him in to rehearsals and, you know, and had him available to all the actors and all the actors to talk to him. And so when Richard talked to him, one of the things that Richard learned was, one, you have to be extremely truthful with paranoid schizophrenics, because they are so perceptive that if you are trying to manipulate them or lie, they will see through you, quite frequently. And it's not just intellectual, it's emotional. So, for instance, in answer to your question, when Walton walks up to Becky in what seems to be a threatening, aggressive manner, Richard says, "Okay, you've scared all of us." You know what I mean? Now, please sit down.
Right.
You know, so he's acknowledging his fear. Well, this came from him talking with Dr. Stern in the rehearsal period. And I went, oh, yeah, that's great. That's a window into how a professional deals with these situations. And Dr. Stern, by the way, he's a psychoanalyst, a PhD, a training analyst, and an author. I mean, he's a pretty impressive guy. And he was also on the closed ward at Yale. So he had direct experience, you know, working with paranoid schizophrenics. And so he was incredibly helpful.
Wow, that's so cool. You have the trifecta of Peter Dinklage, Walton Goggins, Bradley Whitford playing these patients. Did they meet with paranoid schizophrenics? Do you know their research? I'm not, unfortunately, might not get a chance to chat with them.
Oh, well, I did. They met with Dr. Stern. I think I tried to set up for Walton to meet with some patients. But I can't swear that actually happened. What I can say is, you know, we all meet with them. I see on the streets very frequently. You know, you see it in a very florid state. I did go to the National Institute of Health and meet with drug-resistant paranoid schizophrenics, and that was an eye-opener. again, it wasn't entirely different from what you see on the street, you know, or maybe in your family or your, you know, however you might meet people who have this illness. It was just mind blowing. You know, you'd see someone who looked just like you or me, and then you'd ask a question, and then in this case, it was a woman. She would start talking about self-evisceration and razors and stuff like that, and you just your blood would curdle.
Wow!
And then she'd finish, you know, a 2-minute speed rap about wanting to destroy herself, and then she'd just go back to looking perfectly normal. The pain that's in her, yes, you know, and eye-opening, yes, absolutely, and humbling. That the whole thing's been a very humbling experience.
Did you get to shoot in a working hospital, or tell me about some of those? No.
We had very little money. There were very little facilities, so it was a big problem to figure out. We did go to one in Staten Island that wasn't an operating one to shoot, but it was a major production hurdle, again, with little money, and this is a period piece. So it was a production design issue that I had to figure out how to approach, and ultimately my approach when I went over with Stephanie, our production designer, was these black and white tiles, which, you know, were very institutional, and at the institution we shot at, there were various versions of that. So in many ways, that was sort of one of the visual thematic elements, you know, of the interior of the institution, of the D-23 ward and everything.
So you just took a room and you decorated it with black and white tiles? Is that what happened, essentially? Or
Yeah. The way you say the word decorate is exactly what we did, sort of like low-level decoration. But I did, like when we didn't have a facility, we had something that was built in 1923 so that it was very accurate to the time period. So that was very helpful, obviously.
So what was the space?
I don't know if you want to print it, but it was a dance studio at Sarah Lawrence College.
I love that. That's great. I love these little behind-the-scenes stories, you know. People eat that up.
Let them eat it up, because it's part of why so much of my hair is not on my head anymore. I'm scratching my head about how to solve these things.
Oh, man. So now, going back to the three guys, was there a chemistry test that was done? How did you know that they would all get along? Kind of fill me in on that.
Well, I started working with Walton, who I worked with on Justified for like 6 years.
Yes.
I did a lot of work, and I thought he was just like a brilliant actor. And so I talked to him about the thing, and then I gave him the script maybe 4 years before we started shooting. And he'd read it, we'd work on it, and discuss it, and, you know, and he was just so committed and so loyal. I mean, it's like...
He's intense.
I love these guys. Anyway, he's intense, but he's also, he's just smart. He's wonderful. So I thought, well, he'd be great as Leon, obviously. And then Bradley, I'd worked with 4 or 5 times, Whitford, and he wanted to... He just read the script and said, I want to do this. And he was very aggressive, and I went, okay, thank you. Because he's very funny, and he's very, he has such range as an actor that it's a little bit, you know, mind-blowing to see how easily he can go to these places and to take the risks that were necessary to portray, you know, the character of Clyde, and to understand it, and you know what's not visible is the, you know, it's the duck on the surface and the pedaling furiously underneath the water. You know how much work he did to understand the background of the character, prepare it, get himself prepared for rehearsals, and Peter was the last one, and I hadn't worked with Peter, but like most of the world, I'm a fan of his. And he just said, okay, I'm in. And he had one great question. He said, you know, how do I play someone who's insane? I mean, I don't want to go to my tricks and tropes. And I said, you play him sane. I knew Mike Nichols a little bit. He used to have the greatest answers to every question. He was just like a polymath and a wit beyond belief. And that was one of the few times I thought my answer was pretty good, to be able to understand and treat these patients as people not as oddities, not as disposable elements that can be drugged and shocked and warehoused. To have compassion for them, you know. And when we had the screening in Toronto, and I could see the audience really got into the characters and they start to understand the language and they laughed with them, I thought, wow, can't believe it. It's like they get it, you know. They get what these words mean because they're so odd, you know. So in terms of the chemistry, I didn't know for sure until we got into rehearsals. You know, and by the way, I'm very slow at casting, and Richard, I drove him crazy because I took so long to do it. But I've always had great casts, I think. And so I knew I had great actors. Would they work together? Well, in the first 2 days of rehearsal, Bradley and Peter just made fun of me most of the rehearsal. It was really fun for most everybody, even me. And I realized they were creating their chemistry, their bonds. And then during that rehearsal, which was about 2 weeks, yeah, then you could see that they came together. They met with this psychoanalyst who was my advisor, this guy Dr. Stern. They took it so seriously. I mean, their commitment and their trust in me, you know, was really nice. And I tried to be worthy. You would.
Well, I guess you kind of took the last question out of my mouth in terms of, like, on the set, what the set was like. I always say to people, Richard Gere is my favorite person on the planet. So tell me about that, like, what that atmosphere was like. Was there any, like you said, there was a lot of jovialness going on, but what about in general?
Well, I'll give you an example. There was in the experiment itself, as in the book, you know, at some point, each meeting was started with a song. And if you remember that first one where Peter gets chosen, which is quite remarkable that Walton picks Peter, and they vote on it, and then you see Peter walking proudly to the front of the group to start singing. You know, it was just beautiful, the moment. But the idea was that they started with song. It wasn't to hear the song, you know. But here are three people who all served their country or tried to serve their country during the war, as well as Richard. And what are they singing? They're singing, you know, a song about America, right? America the Beautiful. God shed her grace on me. And so they start singing. And as they're singing, I was going to cut after 5 seconds. And then I thought, no, you idiot, just watch. And they got so into it, and they sang with such heart and such devotion. You know, when 15 seconds were up, I said, you are not cutting this, you know. This is magic. Just shut up and don't do anything, you know. And I didn't. And that was them in character. So much of this came from Richard's kind of spiritual quality and empathic quality. He's just such an amazing person. I'm talking about his heart, you know, and he was, you know, the doctor, and he was the fourth Christ. The question, you know, should you go over the line to help people? You know what I mean? It's a tough question, because otherwise they would have been shocked, drugged, and left there for their lives.
Yeah, and I can see now why you chose Richard Gere, because he does have that how do you say that?
Empathic.
There you go. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
Always news.
Always refreshing.
Always candid.
Always billing about.
Robin Milling delivers what celebrities are saying to you.